sweat the technique.
Live in the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Killer Bees. Now back to Joel and Jeremy.
No Blank today. Brian's filling in for Blankers. A few texts here. What do we think about a Paul Goldschmidt acquisition at the deadline, assuming the Astros are buyers and Cardinals are sellers? I think it's a fabulous idea. Anybody who has that idea is a genius. He's only on a one-year deal. Like, I mean, this is the final year of his deal. If the Cardinals are out of the race, you could probably get him somewhat cheap. Like, you know, rentals aren't going to, you know, fetch you back a whole lot. I like the idea of it a lot, depending on where Goldschmidt's at, depending on where you're at, depending on where the Cardinals at. That's a name that makes some sense. That's a name I'll keep my eyes on and see where we're at July 15th.
I mean, Cardinals are in last place in their division, so you could definitely see a scenario where they would be in
So are the Astros.
I know, but we're talking about, you mentioned, or will the Cardinals? Jeremy, we were talking about if the Cardinals would be motivated sellers, and I'm agreeing with the point that they could be because they're last in the division.
He's talking to my wife, Jeremy.
Goldschmidt, though, maybe this is my nerddom for fantasy baseball coming out, but there was a lot of signs that we saw last year, speaking to the nerds in fantasy baseball, that Paul Goldschmidt was slipping. Similar signs that we saw from Jose Abreu, and that be he wasn't catching up to the fastball. Mm-hmm. And early this season, Goldschmidt hitting 195. So is he better than Jose Abreu? 1,000 times yes, but you're not getting MVP Paul Goldschmidt.
No, he would need to show you some life by then. Need to show you. Now, the good news is it's only for the rest of the year. It's a rental. It's not a long-term deal. And you probably need the Cardinals to pay a good chunk of that salary, kind of like how the Mets paid a good chunk of Justin Verlander's salary last year. Branham, that hit against Jay Bruce, would have had to have come against Beaumont Westbrook. Who did you play for? I played for the Humble Wildcats. And David, good old David Sitton, 21-5A baseball. I went to Humble back before there was Atascocita, Summer Creek, Kingwood Park. Just good old Humble and Kingwood, both top 10 enrollment back in my day.
That's a weird flex.
It's not a flex. It really shows you my age. I'm dating myself. It's the anti-flex. XX Ron Blankers did the show the other day alone. He has to recover. That's where he's at today. Did he do the show the other day alone?
No, he hasn't done the show
is
solo.
Is that a dig at you, Brian?
I guess. Yeah, I guess that texter is really leaning into the idea of me being a quote others by saying that he did it a solo.
Yeah. Which, would I not be doing that today?
Yeah, I guess you're doing the show solo.
Which I think is wrong. Is your war zero? Do you exist?
Apparently, my war of zero would still be better than Jose Abreu.
Texter says he's not in today because he went where you were Friday. Blankers is in Cincinnati. Yes or no? Blankers is eating Skyline Chili, which I tried that the other day. More news coming later.
So you hate yourself?
That's mean. 713.
Why else would you try it?
For the views on TikTok.
Okay,
that's why
there
I
you go. I forgot. Yeah, you're an influencer.
Hashtag Skyline. Hashtag Cincy. Hashtag foodies. Like, what are you talking? At Jeremy J. Branham on TikTok, my man.
Such an influencer.
Jeremy Booth, who the best rivalry in the city of Houston early in the baseball season was Jeremy Booth versus Astros Twitter, and I loved it. And I certainly was capitalizing on it, sending some probably some sub-trolls, or sub-tweets, sub-tweet trolls, no doubt about it, like hashtag lineup construction. And Yordan Alvarez on pace, and Jeremy Booth, he actually sniffed that out. He saw me tweeting those things, even though he doesn't follow me. He doesn't care about Twitter reaction. He went on today with the Killer G's, George and Gallant. Joe George called Jeremy Booth a clown a month or so ago, and Booth, all 6'5", 250 pounds of rock muscle, was there next to Joe George today. And credit to Joe George for saying, whenever you said that stuff, I called you a clown. I tip my cap to Joe George for that. It took a lot of courage. Jeremy Booth's a foot taller than Joe George, and he said it right to his face. So I tip my cap, and I tip my cap to Jeremy Booth, too, like coming on the air, discussing these things. I respect Jeremy Booth's baseball opinion. Like, he played professional baseball. He worked as a scout. How could you not respect his baseball opinion? I agree with most of the things he says, actually. Am I going to have fun with his rivalry in Houston Twitter? Absolutely. Absolutely I'm going to have fun with that. I wouldn't be doing my job if I wasn't. Now, when Jeremy Booth finally showed up today, he talked about the two-hole hitters. This has been something that's come up for quite a while. He doesn't like the idea of Yordan hitting second. And his idea is because if he does, you can't have parades.
To me, the Ohtani argument and the Judge argument don't hold any water whatsoever, because here, and for me having done this my entire life, it's about parades. Parades are what we do when they win the World Series, right? In New York, go ask them how they feel about not getting the World Series in 400 years now.
Yeah,
it feels like forever, right?
Yeah, they don't know any different.
They don't know any different anymore. And when you go to Anaheim, and even the Dodgers, who only, and I'm from LA, I grew up out there, and the Dodgers in 2020, I'm not taking it away from them, but it was 2020. It's a pandemic. Okay, we're not talking 162. So we're not talking about playing in hostile environments. These were controlled environments and controlled stadiums. That to me is, it's a championship, but it's not.
It's fraudulent.
Correct. So when you're looking at that, that hasn't worked.
All right. Where do you stand on that, Brian?
I disagree with the idea that it hasn't worked. I mean, he's pointing out two examples of teams that obviously haven't got to a World Series, but I mean, those aren't the only two guys that are, you know, playing at a high level who have ever hit second. I mean, obviously, we pointed this out on the show 100 times. Corey Seager was the Rangers' best hitter. Well, maybe Adolis Garcia, but you can make the argument. And he was hitting second. So I don't believe that having Yordan in the two-hole is some prohibitive thing towards the Astros winning. The other argument against what Jeremy Booth said there, and respectfully, because he's 6'5". Even
that's
though
the only reason.
Yeah, that's a pretty good reason to be respectful. But the other reason is something else we pointed out in the show before. Like, the idea of why, I guess, people are against Yordan hitting in the two-hole would be that you're missing out on Yordan having RBI opportunities. And as we've talked about, I don't have the current on-pace numbers, but there was a time maybe last week where, despite Yordan, like the last two seasons, his last two full seasons, hitting 97 and 97 RBI in 2022 and 2023, don't edit me there. I said what I meant to say. He was on pace, you know, as of like a week ago, for like 130 RBI. So the idea of hitting him in the two-hole would then prohibit him from getting, you know, run driving in opportunities, yeah, just based on the on-pacer numbers seems questionable at best.
Yeah. I would like to have Jeremy Booth on, which I think he'd be open to that, because I think it'd be a good conversation. And again, I agree with most of what Jeremy Booth has to say. I think he is a good baseball man. And I think that he illustrates his points and argues them very, very well. And the current Astro stats back up his point. You know, the Astros have one of the best OPSs.
Yeah, we're not arguing from a good place right now.
No, like he has scoreboard at this moment. Like, if we're being completely honest and we're being completely fair, I think we need to get him on our show at some point. I think it'd be a good conversation, just the back and forth, not necessarily that we're going to be arguing. Also want to get Keith Law on. I meant to text you that earlier and I didn't. We need to get Keith Law on again. Now, to Jeremy Booth's defense here, he doesn't care about Yordan's RBI total. He cares about the run total of the Houston Astros. He cares about them scoring runs and winning. So this isn't so much like, oh, we need to optimize Yordan Alvarez's RBI total. This is, how do the Houston Astros score the most runs that they possibly can? So, you know, I want to, like, that's his standard. I mean, I think that's the standard that you should have. Like, if you're the manager, how do you optimize the lineup to score the most runs, thus win the most games? So I agree with that being the standard of what you need to do with the lineup. Now, in terms of, like, why are the Astros not scoring runs when they have a high OPS and they lead the league in hits and all of these things, I don't think it's the lineup construction as much as I think it's guys that aren't hitting well. Like, Alex Bregman is hitting poorly. He's been batting fourth most of the season, third when he's not batting fourth. Yiner Diaz, while he's been pretty good, he's struggling with runners in scoring position. Chaz McCormick has gotten off to a slow start. In the bottom of the lineup, sans Jeremy Pena and Mauricio Dubon, have been pretty bad as well. His point is you should deepen the lineup. That way you're not as black hole-ish with the Astros outside of the big four. If you want to throw Pena in the mix, the big five, et cetera, et cetera. So I understand his logic, but I don't think that the reason the Astros are failing to score runs at this moment is because of lineup construction. I think it's more because of lack of production from players they should count on. Now, his counterpoint is going to be, well, are they not producing because they're not in the right spot in the lineup? Which I think would be a fair counterpoint, but Alex Bregman has actually had good career numbers batting cleanup prior to this year. Now, the other part about, like, the second hitter, Like, do you want to win championships? Which, again, should be the goal. I agree with that. Like, yes, championships should be the goal. And I also think there's more than one way to cook the egg. I don't think there's a wrong answer here. I'm fine with Yordan batting second. I'm fine with Yordan batting fourth. Like, I think those are the two spots that Yordan Alvarez should be batting to optimize your ability to score runs, blah, 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 blah. But let's talk about the last World Series champions. Like, let's talk, like, because if two hitters, if your best hitter is not batting second, and he's saying that if your two hitter does, you're not winning titles. Well, let's look at every single champion since the golden era of the Houston Astros. Last year, Texas Rangers won the World Series. Their two-hitter was Corey Seager. Best offensive player? Like, they had a deep lineup. That would be the counterpoint. But Corey Seager was their best offensive player. The Houston Astros won the World Series in 2022. Jeremy Peña, not their best offensive player, but he was during that series. Remember, he was the World Series MVP. 2021, the Braves beat the Astros in the World Series. Jorge Soler was their two-hole hitter in that game that they clinched it. Not their best offensive player, but remember, Acuna was hurt, and Soler had a big series, but not their best offensive player, so I wouldn't chalk that one up to my side. 2020, the L.A. Dodgers won the World Series. Corey Seager was the two-hole hitter. Maybe not their best hitter. Maybe it was Mookie Betts, but Seager is certainly in that conversation. So you can decide whether or not you want to track that to yes or no. Washington won the World Series against the Astros in 2019. Their two-hole hitter was Adam Eaton. Certainly not their best hitter. Trey Turner, Anthony Rendon probably were. 2018, the Boston Red Sox won the World Series. Their two-hole hitter was Andrew Benintendi. Their leadoff guy was Mookie Betts, but wasn't their two-hole hitter. And then 17, when the Astros won it, it was Alex Bregman. So I think there's some L's there. I think there's some W's there, but I don't think it precludes you from being a World Series contender if your best hitter is batting second.
Well, yeah, because I think actually, even though Mookie Betts wasn't hitting second in 2018, I think him hitting leadoff still is to the side of your argument. Because, I mean, certainly if you're taking a more traditional stance to where a guy like Mookie Betts would hit, it wouldn't be first. I mean, I think some of the same arguments that Jeremy Booth and others would have against Yordan hitting second would apply to Mookie Betts hitting leadoff, because he'd be, in their mind, coming up with many runners on base, since he'd be coming up right after the bottom of the order.
713-780-ESPN. Can you start saying batting second instead of two-hole? I think it's a fair ask. I think it's a fair request.
Yeah, two-hole is a little phrasing, yeah. as Archer would say. Phrasing.
Some talk show radio hosts wouldn't listen to their audience. They wouldn't take advice and criticism from their audience. I think it's a fair request. I think that's some solid advice there. All right, 713-780-ESPN. What's your stance on best offensive player batting second, good, bad, and then other things that Booth had to say today when he joined a guy who called him a clown, Joe George of the Killer Bees? It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Now back to the Killer Bees
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
No Blank today. Brian's in for Blank. Where is Blank at today? Wrong answers only. 713-780-3776. Joel moonlights as a mannequin model and is at the Texan store sporting the new jersey while getting pocket money.
Wow.
Not a bad side hustle.
Yeah, I can see Joel wanting to mannequin some, especially Nike gear. I know he's big into Nike gear.
Is he in good enough shape to be a mannequin?
See, that was that.
Are his measurables
that comment for Friday, man? Come on.
Are his measurables good enough to be a mannequin? No, I'm just asking the question. I'm not suggesting I have the answer one way or the other. I'm just asking the question. Blankers probably at Academy buying the old Texans jerseys on sale. Blankers does strike me as somebody who appreciates a good value.
You're calling them thrifty?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm not even thrifty. I'm cheap. So again,
okay.
This is
so
pot
cheap
calling
is
the
below thrifty
black.
Then.
I think so. Yeah, I would say cheap's below thrifty.
Yeah,
thrifty's kind of hip. It's kind of vogue. It's kind of in.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, maybe thrifty is just not buying like everything you want to buy, like having some self-restraint. I don't know if that's a way to describe thrifty. But yeah, I would, if I had to guess what side of the aisle Joel was on, I would put it on thrifty more than throwing money around.
I'm not going to read this one. All right. 9361.
Oh, I'm actually not going to read it because usually that's a bit.
9361, have you guys talked about the new uniforms yet? No, we're not doing that today. 6761, never heard of Booth previously, but heard his interview on the earlier show. Dude is an arrogant, know-it-all clown. I'm surprised he didn't claim to know the cure for cancer and then laugh at us for not knowing about it either. Huh. That's a strong take. I like strong takes.
If I'm going to criticize Booth, and I will do it lightly because, again, he's 6'5".
Don't be soft.
I just told you I'm about to criticize him. If you listen to the full interview and go to the podcast page at ESPN975.com or find us on Apple Podcasts, but the dude is an all-time name dropper. Holy cow. Like, if you listen to that interview, every story, every anecdote, every opinion began with, and I know this guy personally. We have a personal relationship with Dusty Baker and James Click and Craig Biggio and Jeff Bagwell and Reggie Jackson. Like, there were so many name drops and unnecessary claims pats on the back for having a personal relationship with people.
You're right, he did do that. I didn't feel like it was so much a name drop. I thought it was more like as a case for his
Here's my credentials.
Yeah, maybe there was more a lot presenting of, a case.
You know? Yeah, I didn't take it as I guess you could take it. That would be the best way to take it, as your case. I took it maybe not so much name dropping, but just like overly promoting his credentials.
Yeah, I feel like we should have this conversation.
Here's why my opinion is the most important one, because I know these people and I'm connected to it.
Yeah. 713-780-ESPN. 713-780-3776. Tyler and Conroe, if Bregman does his job, we aren't having this conversation about Alvarez in the two-hole, my bad. I that's where I'm at. Like, I don't think the struggles of this offense is lineup construction. I think the struggles of this offense is the fact that guys you're counting on to produce aren't producing. Where do you stand on that?
Yeah, no, I completely agree. And this was a thought I had last segment was we were wrapping up, but because I was talking about in the previous segment, you know, Yordan still having tons of run driving in opportunities, as we pointed out with his on pace numbers being at like 130 plus RBI, when his last two seasons before this, stop editing me, were at 97. So, like, you could say, okay, well, it's not not to call you out specifically, but like people on Jeremy Booth's side could say, well, it's not about Yordan, but it's about the rest of the lineup.
Yeah.
If you swap places, Bregman hitting like he isn't going to drive in the opportunities that Yordan was driving in from the two hole. Sorry. There was a good amount of opportunities. As we pointed out, if you're on pace for 130 plus RBI, you're getting a lot of opportunities. And simply swapping Bregman and Yordan means, okay, Bregman goes from not driving the opportunities he has in the four spot to not driving in the opportunity he has in this two spot. I don't think that actually fixes anything. It just swaps the problem.
Yeah, yeah. I tend to agree with that. 713-780-ESPN, your side of it, Hive. Here's a couple more of what Booth had to say. Talked about ex-players like Bagwell being evaluators. He could tell that Jose Abreu was done 2 years ago.
You have, though, oftentimes with former players, and oftentimes, it's not universal, is they see what's in front of their face.
Oh, like the back of a baseball card?
Like that. They get very loyal to their brothers and having done it. And it takes a lot of separation from that to understand it. If you watch Jose Abreu, and again, just going to say it because it's come up. If you watch Jose Abreu, 2 years ago, his bat speed was gone. And do you know how you can tell? Because he's so short and forced to the baseball, he doesn't have the ability to get any length and get any power.
Yeah, I actually agree with him on this. Now, I was excited when the Astros signed Jose Abreu, but I was going more on back of the baseball card because I didn't watch Chicago White Sox games. I enjoy
life. You know, the back of his baseball card.
I don't want to torture myself by watching Chicago White Sox baseball like Joe George does daily. It's his favorite team in Chicago. So I didn't see the bat speed stuff. Now, it's natural evolution of a baseball player. Like, here, newsflash, guys get worse the older they get. It's the history of the game, unless you've been on allegedly performance-enhancing drugs. So that's a good point. I like that part of it, and I agree with the Bagwell aspect of it. Like, this is why players that have zero background in, you know, managing a baseball roster should be as far away from managing the baseball roster as well. Do you want James Click or do you want Jeff Bagwell running your roster? Well, whenever they signed Jose Abreu, it was Jeff Bagwell, Reggie Jackson, Craig Biggio, Enes Cabell, and Jim Crane. And that's why you get a guy like Jose Abreu on the contract you get Jose Abreu on. That's why you sign Michael Brantley, who has a jacked-up shoulder, even though Bagwell had a jacked-up shoulder. Now, that's not to say that James Click wouldn't have signed Abreu, but I don't think there's any way that James Click gives Abreu a 3-year deal. So I agree with Jeremy Booth on this one 100%.
Yeah, I think this is actually Jeremy Booth's best take and opinion of the entire interview. And the whole thing is definitely worth listening to if you want to listen to it starting at 6:05.
6:15.
Or 6:15, yeah. But yeah, I think this is absolutely on point, because even though I think we talked about when the Jose Abreu signing first happened, like, well, the home run numbers are down, but you know, his barrel rate and his hard contact percentages are still there. But some of the numbers, like I mentioned with Paul Goldschmidt in a previous segment, the numbers were there to show that he wasn't getting to the fastballs at the same rate, and that's often the first sign that a hitter in his 30s, like Jose Abreu was, is starting to decline. And I think the danger, as Jeremy Booth points out, when you have guys like Bagwell and Biggio and Reggie Jackson making some of the calls instead of guys like James Click or a more analytical-minded general manager, is that I think players often, as Jeremy pointed out, look as to what the guy has done. They look to see, okay, this guy has been a good player, he's proven, whereas a general manager might look at what this guy is going to do. And I think that's the difference.
Yep.
And then where the problem came in with Jose Abreu.
And a GM should be looking at what they're going to do, not what they have done. And I agree with Booth on that front. 713-780-ESPN. I felt like I had another point to make there, but I forgot what it was, so we'll move on. Jeremy Booth talking about maybe Joe Espada wasn't the right guy for the job.
When you go underneath and you watch what the respect they have for Joe, they respect him. They want to be around him. There's also a reason why Joe has never been a manager anywhere else. The guy was a hot name for like a decade, and nobody hired him.
A lot of interviews.
And when you look at what this team needs, maybe he just wasn't the right fit for where this team is. This is a veteran ball club. It's not young kids. When AJ got here, AJ had a young group of guys. He was able to develop and grow with them. Lots of times that's how you do that, and then they stay together for whatever amount of time. This was more of a veteran, steady hand. I know how to rest guys. I know how to get guys to hustle and how to motivate them. And it's not saying Joe doesn't, but I'm also saying that if we don't think that maybe his hands are tied a little bit, we're being naive on our side.
I remember what I was going to say, and this kind of it can relate with Joe Espada too, but it's a truth bomb. Like, fans of a specific team don't want to hear the bad, right? Because whenever you sign a player, there's a range that it could go in. It could go in a good range. It could go in the bad side of the range. Jose Abreu could have came in here and did exactly what he did in Chicago, where he's not hitting for power, but he's hitting 305, 15 homers. He's hitting with runners in scoring position, and he's driving in runs. Or it could go the way that it has gone. Like, that's the range of what Jose Abreu can give you. So whenever you sign a Jose Abreu, all the Houston fans want to be excited. So you're only going to gravitate to the good, the positive possibilities on that range. And when somebody tells you that it could be bad, you're going to dismiss that person, you're going to try to discredit that person, and you're going to talk down on that person. Quite frankly, it's what happened with Jerry Booth at the start of this year. He presented a possibility within the range that this could happen because of a theory that he believes in, which, you know, I think he is a respected baseball guy. He's certainly within his rights and reasons to have this theory, but because you and we, is like Houston Astro people, we hear this negative side of a potential range of possibilities, and we try to discredit it because, quite frankly, we don't want to hear it, we don't want to see it, we don't want to believe it to be true. I think you can look at that with Booth, with the lineup construction. I think you can look at that whenever Jose Abreu was signed by the Astros. That's why I want to talk to Keith Law. Whenever Jose Abreu was signed by the Astros, Keith Law destroyed it. Said, this is a terrible signing. Astros are going to regret it. And Houston Astros were throwing Keith Law under the bus. This guy's an idiot. Discrediting him. Making him sound like a fool. He's an idiot. He also had the Hunter Brown take, where Hunter Brown should be a reliever. Oh, this guy's a moron. He doesn't know what he's talking about. And he also had the James Click take, where the Astros are firing James Click and Jim Crane turning into Jerry Jones. Which, again, at the time, oh, you know, what an idiot Keith Law is. Again, because a possibility of range that you don't want to believe to be true. All three of those are examples. And I think Joe Espada is an example here, too. It's far too early to call it on Joe Espada, but is it within the range of possibility that he is Steven Silas? I think it's within the range. Now, it's the worst possible scenario part of the range. I think it's more likely they figure it out, they win the division, Joe Espada's fine. But is it within the realm of possibility that Joe Espada could be in the wrong spot? Is it a possibility that Joe Espada isn't one of the best 32 baseball minds in the world? Is it a possibility that Joe Espada doesn't have the energy, you know, and the excitement to lead this team? Is it possible that the club doesn't respect him? Now, Booth said that that wasn't the case. This club really respects Joe Espada, and he has behind the scenes knowledge on that, so I trust him on that. But is it possible that Joe Espada isn't the right man for the job? It's within the realm of possibility, but as Astro fans, especially at the start of the season versus now, you're not going to believe that to be true.
Yeah, no, because a lot of the talking points coming out of the Joe Espada hiring was how on board all the Astros players were with it. And so I think us as Astros fans, myself included, and I was someone that was defending Jose Abreu and pointed to things like barrel rate, so maybe I'm guilty a lot of this.
But that's natural as a fan.
It is natural. But I to Jeremy Booth's point, I do think there's some possibility there, as you said, within the range of outcomes that – even though the Astros roster likes Joe Espada, they like him as a man. Maybe they were all in support of him becoming the team's manager. There is, I think, a possibility, as Jeremy Booth pointed out, that maybe he's not the right type of manager. I mean, Jeremy made the point of they needed more of a calming voice, a steady hand from a veteran guy who's been through all the wars and knows exactly what to say in that moment because he's seen it before. It's Joe Spada, and this part of not necessarily his fault, but he doesn't have that experience. He may not know what to say to a veteran team. Maybe Joe Espada would have been better off taking his first job with a young team that he could have grown up with, as Jeremy Booth pointed out. So, I mean, even if it's not Dusty Baker, if Dusty Baker either wants to retire or you want to believe that he retired because of Twitter or whatever you want to believe about it, maybe the better move, and we'll find this out over the course of the season, would have been to go for another veteran-type manager that was more similar to Dusty Baker than maybe what we're seeing with Joe Espada.
Yeah, and look, I don't believe that to be true. I think it is in the range of possibility, just like I don't believe Jeremy Booth's lineup construction is true. Do I think it's within the range of possibilities? Yeah. Same thing with Jose Abreu when the Astros signed him. It was a range of possibilities that he was going to fade as a baseball player. We didn't want to believe it at the time, just like Hunter Brown. Like, people were saying he's a reliever, but everybody wants him to be a starter, and they're going to dismiss the negative, even though it definitely is in the range of possibilities. 713-780-ESPN, HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. 6030, Joe Silas put some respect on his name.
I thought he was Sleepy Joe. Isn't that what we decided on?
I like Sleepy Joe. I like Sleepy Joe better, if we're going to bang on him. 6'9", I really want this most interesting manager in the world thing to work, but he's just not allowing it to happen. It doesn't roll off the tongue whenever you're 9 games below 500. 6955, reading the back of this baseball card is the investment equivalent of saying, well, the stock made money last year. That's a good point, too. All right. 713-780-ESPN. 058, Dustin only won 23 games in his first season. I don't know. I don't think that's true. I think they were 29-31. I think he won 29 games his first season. That was the COVID year.
They played a 60-game season. They were 2 games under 500.
29-31.
Yeah, I believe they were 29-31.
Yeah, so he won more than 23, but not much. All right, 713-780-ESPN, HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. We'll step aside for a moment. We come back. It's the Will of Bits. You never know what you're going to get with the Will of Bits, but you know it's going to be great. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
It's the Killer Bees, and I honestly have no idea what's happening next. Could it be the next great big food debate? The biggest Joel rant of all time? Jeremy trolling someone to the point of crying? Or just some actual bees making some honey? Well, let's find out. It's time for the Wheel of Bits.
Oh, my goodness. Would you look at this? What an enormous spin.
Let's play food debates.
All right, he's Brian. No blankers today. Where's blankers today? 713-780-ESPN. This is not a where blankers is, but 9458. Did Booth talk more about who he knows more than blanks let us know that he works for the Rockets?
It's pretty close. Rocket launch, but it was probably
more per minute.
Did Jeremy Booth tell us about who he knows more than Joel tells us about golfing with Charles Barkley?
He doesn't mention Charles Barkley as much anymore since we called him out for that.
Yeah, I know. I'm mostly needling, but it was the name drop per minute ratio was pretty high there from Jeremy Booth.
Yeah. All right. What did the voice person say?
Food debates.
Food debates. Oh yeah, this is the Skyline Chili thing.
Yes.
I had Skyline. I went to Cincinnati this past weekend. I've had Skyline Chili before in my life, but it was like 10 years ago, and I'd forgotten what it tasted like. And I wish that I hadn't forgotten what it tasted like, because I wouldn't have ever tried it again. Skyline Chili is trash. Skyline Chili is terrible.
Now, I'm forgetting what all is in Skyline. It's spaghetti noodle and like chili.
Well, the chili itself is not like they put their chili on the spaghetti noodle.
Right.
Yes, that's kind of one of their. Now they'll also put it on a chili dog, so you can order it different ways. I only tried the chili because I think the chili on a noodle is stupid, quite frankly.
So you tried just direct chili.
I think I got a pint of chili. I just had a couple of bites, and it was only a couple of bites because it was awful. Skyline Chili is terrible. It doesn't taste good. There's like hints of cinnamon, I think, in it.
Yeah.
Maybe a little bit of sugar. It tastes awful, and it's very liquidy, and the meat's very, very fine. Very fine. Like, it's almost so fine that it's like one giant broth. It's terrible. You know who has better chili than Skyline Chili? Wendy's. Wendy's chili is far better than Skyline Chili. Now, Wendy's will put beans in their chili, which is an entirely different conversation.
Sacrilege.
I don't mind beans in chili. Like, it's a little heartier. They taste fine. I have no problem if someone puts beans in their chili.
It's not bad, and I'll admit that I do it because my wife likes it, but she's a Yankee, so, you know, I think it's a Yankee thing. If I were making chili just for me, it would not have beans in it.
I don't mind beans. I probably put beans in my chili, which I know you like. You said sacrilege. I understand that, and I respect that point. But anybody who likes Skyline Chili, they have lost all credibility when it comes to their opinion of food. If somebody tells me that they like Skyline Chili, I will never listen to your food advice ever again.
So you said
ever again?
Did you say it was like watery or liquid?
It's very the like hamburger thin? Meat that you put in the chili is very, very fine. It is very, very thin. It is very watery. Yes.
Yeah.
Very watery.
I mean, chili should be thick with two C's. I mean, that's,
yeah.
It should not pour out super, it should not
awful.
Pour out like water.
There might even be molasses in it. It might even be molasses in there. Now, the idea of putting it on spaghetti noodle too, that's absurd.
Yeah, that's the
That
the
is ridiculous.
The pictures I've seen, and I've never been to Cincinnati or had Skyline Chili, thankfully, because I don't hate myself. The pictures I've seen is of them putting the Skyline Chili like on noodles with like cheese and onions, almost kind of like a Frito pie, but with horrible chili and with noodles instead of Fritos.
Yeah, it's terrible stuff. Never have Skyline Chili. Skyline Chili is awful. It's not very good. And again, if you like it, you lose all credibility. All right, who has the best bread? Then we'll wrap up our food debates here with who has the best bread. Cheesecake Factory, which looks like a little bit of a brown bread.
Yeah,
I've never
like
had
a
Cheesecake Factory bread. It looks brown. What is
it would be a wheat bread, though. I guess. But
okay, Red Lobster, who has those, what are they called?
Cheddar
Bay Biscuits.
Yeah, Cheddar Bay Biscuits.
The Olive Garden Breadsticks, the Texas Roadhouse with the brown sugar, the Cracker Barrel Biscuits, the Outback Bread, which is, again, brown, but they have that really good butter. I've never had the Boston Market Bread.
I haven't either.
Longhorn Steakhouse I had, but it's mid. And then Buca di Beppo.
I don't even know how many Buca di Beppos are around anymore. There used to be one on here over near kind of where we are on 59 and Buffalo Speedway, but it's now a Tex-Mex restaurant. So I don't know how many of those are open. To me, there's a clear top tier like amongst three bread top tier, and that would be the Cheddar Bay biscuits from Red Lobster, the Texas Roadhouse rolls, and then the Olive Garden breadsticks.
Yeah.
And I think if I only could pick one of those, and I like Cracker Barrels as well, but I mean, I'm not going to pick two different types of biscuits. I'm just going to pick the best one, and it's Red Lobster. But if I could only pick one, and maybe this is unfair because I'm mostly picking it for what goes on to it, but I would pick the Texas Roadhouse rolls because that cinnamon butter is amazing.
Yeah, see, the bread's really good, but it's kind of desserty to me. So if I'm getting it before a meal, it's probably not number one on my list, but it is very, very tasty. The Outback bread's fantastic. So is the Red Lobster, Cheddar Bay biscuits. Those are great. Write-in vote for a local establishment. Italiano's Garlic Knots are fantastic.
Yeah, there's one right near me on North Park in Kingwood. Their garlic knots are fantastic.
The Italiano's Garlic Knots are to die for. But if these are my options, give me Red Lobster Cheddar Bay biscuits by a hair over Outback. And then Texas Roadhouse is certainly in the conversation. Let's give him a not distant, a very close third. Very close third.
Are any of these ones that you, because I don't know about you, but I could live on carbs and carbs alone.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't kick any of these out of bed. But are any of these breads that you would actually pass on? Are there any breads up here that you actively dislike?
I don't I like bread, but I could do without bread. These Boston Market, whatever these things are, they don't look good.
No, yeah, they don't. The appeal of the look is not great.
If you get a hard biscuit, like whatever, that does nothing for me. I don't want a hard biscuit. If it's a hard biscuit, I'm out on it. Olive Garden breadsticks are usually good, but there are some times where you get some bad batches, and I can't speak to the Boca de Beppo. I can't speak to that because I've never had them.
You mentioned something, if we can quickly diverge on biscuits, and this might be something that gets me in trouble with Southerners everywhere, and I am amongst you. I'm born and raised in the city, but I have a take that some of you may not like. I don't really like the Popeyes biscuits. The taste, the flavor's fine, but they're so dry, it feels like my esophagus is going to just rip into shreds unless I'm chasing it with water after two chews.
Yeah, it is. You need a lot of water. Now, I like putting some jam or jelly on it.
That would help. Good. That would help. It's just they're so dry on their own, and I love biscuits. I mean, it's up there with tortillas as far as one of my favorite foods to eat. But the Popeyes biscuits are just so dry.
They can be a bit dry. I don't mind them. Usually I give them to my oldest son, though.
I thought you were going to say your dog.
No, I don't have a dog. I'm too lazy to have a dog. I don't want to clean up after
a
dog.
And you'd have to walk it. You don't like exercise.
Yeah, I'm anti-exercise. All right, 713-780-ESPN. What are you nominating for the car wreck of the day? Car wreck of the day coming up next, 713-780-3776. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. I've been telling you for what seems like years that Gentle Ben is the best. And it all starts with the finest ingredients, classic time-honored distilling methods. Gentle Ben uses a revolutionary technology that eliminates impurities for the cleanest, smoothest spirits you'll ever taste. You'll love what's not in Gentle Ben, including VOCs, volatile organic compounds. The Gentle Ben purification process takes these out, which can lead to coughing when you're drinking the other brands. You get all the flavor, none of the burn, whether it's the vodka, gin, straight bourbon whiskey, or cask-strength bourbon. Next time you head to dinner, go to your favorite bar, ask for Gentle Ben. Look for Gentle Ben at the liquor store, whichever one you go to, or whatever's on the way home, and pick up a bottle today. If you're looking for plans, head to Gentle Ben. Head to the tasting room in Alvin. If you're going to an Astros game, tread cautiously, but also stop by the Gentle Ben bar on the way to your seats. Pick up some bourbon. It goes with your baseball. Gentle Ben, all the flavor, none of the burn. Head to gentleben.com to learn more or order now.
I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man. Across the deserts, bare, man. I breathe the mountain air, man. I've traveled, I've had my share, man. I've been everywhere.
You found the Killer Bees, live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios. Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
No Blankers today. Brian's in for Blankers. Currently a custodian cleaning up our area because
you saw that on the camera.
Yeah,
he stepped in front of the bee.
He can't usually do this at 5:50 because we're on the air in the studio, but no Blankers. I'm in College Station for Houston A&M baseball, number one team in the country. Cougars trying to pull up the upset. Texas A&M has not lost an out-of-conference game. They've lost one time at home. Hopefully that all changes today. This is J.P. France's music, as you can tell. J.P. France is on the mound tonight for the Astros beginning a three-game series. Jonathan Patrick France against the Chicago Cubs at Wrigley. It's cold there in Chicago, apparently.
Oh, yeah?
Usually Blankers gives us the line. What does J.P. France do? I'll tell you if it's better or worse.
I will predict J.P. France today 5 2/3, 3 earned, 5 strikeouts.
I'll take it. Yeah, I'll take that.
Okay.
I'll take that. Will you take that line from J.P. France? I'll take that. I think it's going to be the runs might be right. I think it's going to be lower innings.
Oh, lower less than 5 2/3?
Yeah, I'll go – yeah, I'm going to say less than 5 2/3. The runs is fine with me. Maybe it's like 5-3, something like that. All right, what are you nominating for car wreck of the day? 713-780-3776. Let's get to car wreck of the day.
You all right?
My leg is broken. The bone's coming through.
Give me a bone, you prick. Where's my money?
This is the car wreck of the day.
All right, car wreck of the day. What are you nominating for car wreck of the day? 713-780-3776. What do you got, Brian?
I actually got a couple from the NBA. The whole just nonsense at the end of 76ers and Knicks with Nick Nurse trying to call timeout, but claiming, you know, the referees looked right at him and just ignored his timeout call, obviously blowing the lead. And then apparently the NBA officials came out and admitted some fault there. So that's certainly worth a nominee. And then also Nuggets and Lakers. Lakers down 0-2 now to the Nuggets. Jamal Murray hits the game-winning shot. But we've had multiple days where the Lakers started off, or multiple games where the Lakers started off well, and people like ESPN and other accounts are sending out, look at the Lakers, look at LeBron James, and then they blow the lead. I believe they were up. Let's see how much were they up by.
Lakers up 20.
Yeah, they were. Yeah, I was just looking at halftime. So at halftime, they were up 15. You mentioned the league got up to 20. Everyone's sending out all these pro LeBron James tweets, all these Lakers tweets, trying to early victory lap any predictions they might have had about the series and maybe a possible upset, while not letting the game finish. And that certainly looks foolish now.
Yeah, I had the Lakers nominated here too. I didn't have any problem with the way they defended that last play. I saw some people being critical of the way they defended that.
No, it was
like
a difficult shot.
Yeah, they were switching every screen. Anthony Davis forced Jamal Murray to take a fadeaway 15-footer. Like, it's not an easy shot.
Yeah, if you force the guy to take a fadeaway, I think you've done your job.
Yeah, it wasn't like a wide-open look. He's shooting oversized. Like, I thought they defended it pretty good. And Anthony Davis' answer, like, what happened on that final play? You got screened. He's like, well, Jamal Murray hit a shot, and then Mike Drop walked off. I thought that was a fine response. What I lost in the shuffle was Anthony Davis getting knocked to the Nugget bench in the victory celebration.
Yes.
Like, it took him a while to get out.
It did, yeah.
Like, baby giraffe trying to figure out his way to get out away from the bushes or something. But also, the fact that they blew the 20-point lead. Okay, you're down 2-0 against Denver. I think your chances of winning that series are done. I also think the Sixers' chances of winning that series is over. But hearing LeBron
Joel
James,
Embiid guaranteed it?
Yeah, people guarantee stuff all the time. It doesn't mean it's going to happen.
Says they're the better team.
But LeBron crying about the NBA replay system. Like, go win a game, dude. Like, hey, stop crying about the officials and go make a play to make sure your team wins the game. Like, it was a bad look in my opinion.
I agree, but I think I've grown numb and accustomed to that from LeBron. He's always complaining about the referees.
Yeah, that's a good point. Car Wreck of the Day nominees, 3413, Car Wreck of the Day, when BMAC and Blankers hosted on their own. BMAC previewed the Wheel of Bits selected segment about food before they spun the wheel. Illusion ruined. Do you remember this, Brian?
Vaguely, yeah, that would have been Friday. I possibly could have done that, yeah. Although I wasn't leading, so if it was a tease going into the break, that would have been Joel.
Did you think you were going to be leading that day?
I did.
When did you realize you were not leading?
When Joel took it at the beginning of the show. It was honestly an error, because the last couple times you were out, and granted it wasn't for the full show, but Joel let me lead. And so I guess I made the mistake of assuming. And so the start of the show happened, and we both started...
That was someone texted me about that.
Yeah,
I actually went back and listened. Someone was like, hey, who was leading that show? I was like, I don't know. And so I went back and listened, and I could hear you were about to start, and then, like, he jumped in, and you were like, oh, I could hear you surprised.
Yeah, I was a little surprised, but honestly, that's an error on my part. I should have cleared that with him. His name's on the show. I should have cleared that, but yeah, we had a little bit of awkward moment, but after that, the show was fine.
I hosted with AJ Hoffman once. I filled in for Fred on the Blitz way back in the day.
Uh-huh.
It's probably been 10 years now. And I thought I was filling in for Fred, so I would be driving, and the same thing happened. Well, like, he, like, jumped in. I was like, oh, I guess I'm the two-chair today, which I don't care. I couldn't care less.
Yeah,
I like being the
same.
Two-chair.
I didn't care. I mean, if Joel wants to take it, he certainly is entitled to take it. But I was operating off what we'd done the last two times, and so I was caught a little off guard.
Blanker's like, I'm the captain of this ship.
Yeah,
baby.
I know. I'm the captain now.
All right, who you?
Lakers.
Lakers. Lakers win?
Yeah.
All right.
Lakers for me.
Congratulations, Lakers. You're our car wreck of the day. Probably won't be the last time you're the car wreck of the day. Coming up, Hall of Fame at 7 o'clock. Brad Gilmore, Booker T, Hall of Fame. You won't want to miss that. Certainly not tonight. It's going to do it for us. Thanks to Brian for doing all the hard work. For Brian, I'm Jeremy. We'll talk to you tomorrow, Houston. So long, everybody.